Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm your host, Pat Johnston, flying solo on this episode, but that's okay because I've got lots that I want to cover here this week. For instance, congratulations to the St. Louis Blues on preventing another Boston team from winning another championship. I thank you, and America thanks you as well. Oh, well done. Now, if we can just somehow find a way to stop Tom Brady and the Patriots from winning another Super Bowl, I will be a happy man. Now, next week, I will have a representative from the American Civil Liberties Union of Michigan to discuss the fight on making voting more easily accessible for Michiganders. The ACLU Michigan played a key role in getting Proposal 3, the Promote the Vote Amendment, passed in a statewide ballot initiative back in 2018. And thanks in part to voters overwhelmingly passing that initiative, we can now vote straight party ticket, which Michigan Republicans gutted a few years ago, if you remember, and they gutted it because they knew it would create longer lines in Democratic precincts, which tend to be in more heavily populated areas in the state. Oh, I know. They said, no, we don't want straight party ticket voting because we want people to really pay attention on the candidates, not so much the party. Yeah, whatever. Why would anybody, if they don't like Donald Trump, if they didn't like Rick Snyder, if they faulted the Republican Party for poisoning an American city, a Michigan city's water, why in the world would they vote for anybody in that party? They wanted to vote straight party ticket? Let them vote straight party ticket. That is their right. Of course, though, the Republicans didn't want to give the people that right because they wanted to slow down the voting lines. They wanted to discourage some people who were in those long lines from staying in line to vote. That is always the whole point when it comes to Republicans and Michigan Republicans. They want to discourage people from voting, not encourage people to vote because that hurts them. Promote the Vote also allowed for same-day registration. It also grants voters the right to vote absentee for any reason. It automatically registers Michiganders to vote at the Secretary of State office, and it also allows residents to vote up to and on Election Day. Yes, it's called making voting easy because we are a free society. You know, Republicans, I mean, they always claim that they are for the people, but they're not, which is why Republicans in this state and around the country try to make it more difficult for certain citizens to vote. That is what they've always been about. I mean, we just honored those who gave their lives on D-Day during World War II. They died so people had the freedom to vote. Instead, Republicans throughout the country set up roadblocks to vote. The Republican war against voting continues even in Florida. After voters passed a ballot initiative down there to allow felons the right to vote after they served their time. You remember that? That passed overwhelmingly in Florida. In Florida! Florida doesn't do anything right, especially when it comes to elections. But on that vote, they did. The new law allowed felons the right to vote after they served their time, and it excluded those convicted of murder and sexual felonies. But Florida Republicans freaked out because they hate it whenever democracy works against them. In fact, they deplore democracy. That explains why they passed a bill forcing ex-inmates to pay a slew of court costs and fees in order to gain the right to vote. So Florida Republicans set up a new form of a poll tax to prevent a group of people from voting. But that's what Republicans do. I mean, Republicans are always shouting how they don't vote on feelings and base their ideas on the law. But when the law doesn't work for them, they resort to traveling back in time to the Jim Crow days by setting up new poll taxes. Now, Michigan Republicans learned a long time ago that they can never win elections based on ideas. Their policies are simply extremely unpopular. But rather than explain why cutting corporate taxes for their donor base, or how slashing funding for schools, or how proposing to pass anti-LGBT bills, or proposing to allow corporations to further pollute our environment would help Michigan, Republicans decided to use dirty tactics to stay in power. They did that through making voting harder for college students, for example, and they did it through gerrymandering. Now, Republicans knew they could never win based on the merits of their arguments, and that's why they needed to systematically cheat. That's what they did. They systematically cheated. We already know that historically, younger people tend not to vote in large numbers, unlike older voters. But we also know that younger voters tend to be more progressive. As we're seeing, according to polls, millennials and the Generation Z voters are very liberal as opposed to their conservative baby boomer counterparts. And the youth vote actually did increase quite significantly in 2018. According to census numbers, nearly 36% of voters ages 18 to 29 voted, as compared to just 20% in 2014. Also, younger women outvoted their younger male counterparts in that 2018 election. I mean, that is pretty impressive. But it also does show that more work is needed to be done. It also shows the work Democrats must do to harness this highly important voting bloc, a bloc that helped many candidates across the country win their races. Now, seeing these numbers, you'd think that Republicans would want to figure out exactly how their messages just aren't reaching young people. You'd think Republicans would say that perhaps covering up or cozying up with Donald Trump isn't exactly working for them. You'd think Republicans would say that perhaps passing $1.5 trillion tax cut benefiting their rich donor base isn't exactly working for them. You'd think Republicans would say that perhaps constantly attacking the LGBT community isn't exactly working for them. You think Republicans would say that perhaps attacking a woman's right to an abortion or making it more difficult for a woman to obtain birth control isn't exactly working for them. You think Michigan Republicans would say covering up for an administration that allowed and ignored the poisoning of a city's water system isn't exactly working for them. You think Michigan Republicans would say their charter school experiment isn't exactly working for them. You think Michigan Republicans would say Betsy DeVos's donations aren't exactly working for them anymore. You think Michigan Republicans and national Republicans would say that ignoring how millions of young voters struggle with student debt isn't exactly working for them anymore. You think that Michigan Republicans would say alienating or ridiculing young voters isn't exactly working for them anymore. You'd think. But rather than addressing those issues, Republicans for decades thought the better play was to frustrate young voters by making it harder to vote. In Michigan, Republicans passed a law back in 1999 requiring matching addresses for voter registration and driver's licenses. Now, back when I was a freshman at Central Michigan University in 1994, I remember registering to vote inside my dorm. And then, a few months later, traveling to the local elementary school to cast my vote. It was that easy. And it helped encourage young people to vote. But then Republican State Senator Mike Rogers came up with a brilliant idea and a brilliant strategy. And he introduced a bill requiring the matching addresses for voter registration and driver's licenses. Naturally, then Republican Governor John Engler enthusiastically signed that bill into law. And that hampered the ability for young people to vote. It frustrated them for years. And that benefited the GOP for years. And that wasn't all. As the Detroit News reminded us last summer, a separate 2004 law requires residents to vote in person for the first time if they registered by mail or third-party registration drives. This identity protection safeguard, critics say, can prevent college students from voting by absentee ballot in their first election. Oh, that was a well-played maneuver there by the Republicans. Thankfully, last year, college-age progressives had enough and pressed ahead with a lawsuit saying that these bills disenfranchise their vote, which is true. The Michigan GOP effectively erected roadblocks to frustrate the youth from voting. And if you frustrate the wrong people from voting this time, maybe, just maybe, they won't vote again in the future. It's a great strategy. But finally, thanks to groups like the ACLU Michigan, the League of Women's Voters, and countless others, progressives finally fought back and got the Promote the Vote proposal on the ballot in 2018, and it passed. And it passed by epic proportions. And thanks to Promote the Vote's passage, young people will benefit. Democratic Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson, who won in 2018, just announced that while those laws will remain intact, parts of those old 1999 and 2004 laws are nullified when it comes to first-time voters. Now, because of that lawsuit, Benson was able to come to an agreement with those college Democrats, and here's what happened with that agreement to settle those cases. The AP reports that Benson says a requirement that some first-time voters cast a ballot in person if they registered by mail or a third-party registration drive was rendered moot by a 2018 voter-approved constitutional amendment that lets voters vote absentee without giving a reason. That same story reports that Benson will create a website dedicated to providing voting information to college students and first-time voters. She will also more frequently deploy a mobile office to boost voter registration on campuses. That is terrific news. Big news there. And there are three takeaways here. First, don't ever be fooled that Republicans want fair elections. They want anything but fair elections. Second, when you vote a strong progressive in office, the outcomes tend to benefit the people. Progressives tend to want government to work for the people, not against them. And third, if you show young voters that you care about their needs, they will back you. It's that simple. I know. It's not rocket science. These years and years and years of Republican roadblocks and gerrymandering have hurt Michiganders and the rest of the nation. It's how we watched our infrastructure crumble. It's how we watched corporations poison our water systems without any fear of legal retribution. It's how we got the Flint water crisis. It's how we got emergency manager laws. It's how we got draconian Medicaid work requirements. It's how we got massive corruption with privatization in our prison system. And it's how we got decades of GOP dominance in the state legislature. Finally, progressive fighters and activists said enough is enough and bypassed the legislature by legalizing pot, ending politicians from gerrymandering their districts, and yes, by passing sweeping voting rights legislation. Progressives finally learned that playing nice with Republicans gets you nowhere. Progressives were flat out tired of playing on the Republicans' turf for a change. They wanted Republicans to fight on our turf. And guess what? We won. But I fear some haven't gotten that lesson just yet. Look, I was elated when Haley Stevens and Alyssa Slotkin were able to flip their congressional districts from red to blue in 2018. They did it thanks to a higher youth voter turnout and a higher female turnout. They did it also because they presented a contrast from the male-dominated Trump Republican Party, and they won. And it was a beautiful sight because we desperately need more women in Congress, just as we saw happen here in the state legislature. But I tend to get discouraged, and I bet a good many others out there get discouraged as well, when they read this story from the Michigan Advance with the title, Stephen Slotkin, Remain Cautious on Impeachment. What more do we need to understand that impeachment hearings must begin now, not later, on Donald Trump? Come on, we've got to move. Slotkin told Michigan Advance that she fears focusing on impeachment hinders the Democrats' abilities to pass laws helping people. Wait, we can't do two things at once anymore? And I always love the argument, too. Those who say, well, we got to take our time with impeachment, or really, what's the point of impeachment? Because Mitch McConnell is going to block anything from passing. There's no way that impeachment will ever reach the Senate. Okay, well then why pass any kind of law in the House of Representatives because Mitch McConnell is sitting up there in the Senate to ensure that nothing will pass? Come on, you've got to show the people that you are actually fighting for them. I like that Congresswoman Slotkin is hoping to pass bipartisan laws. That's okay. You know, I like her bill banning foreign nationals from buying political ads on Facebook. I think that's a wise bill. But even on something as logical as this bill, even that is getting pushback from today's Republican Party. And Congresswoman Slotkin even said, there's a whole series of things that in normal times would have been passed years ago, but I don't think it's a partisan issue when it comes to getting foreign influence out of our political process and our elections. Well, Congresswoman, there you go. The Republican Party doesn't care about solving problems. They care about enriching their donor base. And if the current system is benefiting them, why in the world would they want to change it? As I've said many, many, many times on this podcast, Trump is not an aberration here, everybody. Trump is the Republican Party, and the Republican Party is Donald Trump. These quote-unquote normal times that Congresswoman Slotkin refers to is a mythical time. Certainly, she hasn't forgotten how the GOP blocked everything that her former boss, President Obama, tried to pass during his 8 years in office, right? She hasn't forgotten that. I mean, apparently former Vice President Joe Biden has completely forgotten, as he foolishly states that if we only get rid of Trump, then we'll have a more sensible and more reasonable GOP. What? Is Joe senile? I mean, where? Where was he from 2009 through 2017? Merrick Garland? Joe? Do I have to bring up that name? I don't want to work with Republicans because it has hurt Americans for far too long. Well, wait, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe I can't be as black and white with that one. I do want Democrats to work with Republicans when it helps the people. But if you're just going to run slightly left of center, the Republicans will eat us alive as they did for decades. It's time for a change, and we finally got some of that change in 2018. We did it by fighting. We did it by standing up for some principles. We did it by showing the people, by showing the American people, that we have policies that are fighting for them, that will benefit them. We can't afford to squander what we just won in 2018. We've got to show the people that we are with them. Then and only then can we reclaim power, both in Washington, but especially here in the state of Michigan. You're listening to LOL.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Rumor has it, if you want to get Pat really fired up, just tell him Ringo Starr is just an average drummer. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Now, back to Pat.
Hey, remember that you can follow me on Twitter. That's Left of Lansing. Again, that is at Left of Lansing. Make sure I say that one correctly. And we are also on the Facebook as well. As you know, I have read and watched and listened and argued about the Flint water crisis since it began some 5 years ago. In fact, if you listen to last week's podcast, I talked about it and was happy that I learned that Solicitor General Fadwa Hamid and Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy seized former Governor Rick Snyder's public phone and other mobile devices. It's about time. However, I've also become extremely frustrated with how long it has taken for someone to be held accountable for the worst man-made crisis to happen in the state of Michigan. It's been five long years. Children suffered lead poisoning, which will affect their cognitive abilities for the rest of their lives. Pregnant mothers drank the poisonous water, which will forever hurt those kids for the rest of their lives. Infant mortality rates rose. People got sick with Legionnaire's disease, leading to 12 deaths. All of this happened under former Governor Rick Snyder's watch. Unlike rushing to sign Right to Work for Less into law, or rushing to sign off on major tax breaks for his rich donor base, or rushing to reverse the people's decision to abolish the emergency manager law, Snyder was indifferent to the crisis he caused in Flint. Now, if you recall, Snyder ran on being an accountable CEO who'd run this state like a business, because when have we ever gone wrong when so-called business people run the government? Bush, Cheney, Trump. For years, I had to endure the right wing sanctimoniously preach on about how we failed to teach young people about accountability, about how we just want to give kids participation trophies. I mean, if you were following politics during the Obama years, trust me, you heard that a lot ad nauseum. Yet, when the Flint water crisis started to unfold, Mr. CEO, Mr. Accountability, was nowhere to be found. His staff seemed to acknowledge something was amiss in Flint, but for some darn reason, Rick Snyder just had no idea. It was just dumb luck. Dumb luck that no one ever told him that citizens in his own state were drinking poisoned water. I always thought a leader's main job above anything else was to protect his people. Rick Snyder failed, and failed miserably on that front. 5 years have gone by, and Flint residents still don't trust the government when they're told the water is fine to drink. Well, how do you expect them to react? They were told that once before, and they got burned. They drank water from the untreated Flint River in the name of saving money. Rick Snyder's emergency managers, Gerald Ambrose and Darnell Early, had one job and one job only: run Flint on the cheap. And thanks to Snyder and the Michigan Republican Party for overturning the people's vote to abolish the emergency manager law back in 2012, the emergency managers regained their power in Flint and other cities suffering from years and years of failed Reaganomics. The emergency managers had complete control over Flint. The Flint City Council, the Flint mayor, had no control over their city. It was the emergency managers who had full control. And the answer to one person and one person alone, Governor Rick Snyder. Why he never resigned showed you how little regard he had for the people of Flint. It showed you that despite people getting poisoned and dying under his watch due to his policies, Rick Snyder didn't care enough about them to ever consider resigning. Now, I'll give Governor Gretchen Whitmer credit for being an adult, because had I been in her position, I would have told him to never attend my inauguration ceremony. But that's just me. Snyder is a disgrace to the state and forever will be. And come to think of it, so is the Republican legislature, which failed to hold anyone accountable in this crisis. They didn't hold hearing after hearing after hearing after hearing to get the bottom of this crisis. No, they didn't do anything. They didn't care enough to get the facts because, hey, you know, it's Flint. And come to think of it, former Republican Attorney General Bill Schuette showed his true colors as well. Oh, sure, Schuette pressed charges against some officials, but his special counsel dude didn't seem to be moving at lightning speed to get those people in a courtroom. Again, think about it. If ISIS had poisoned the Flint River, do you think it would have taken this long to prosecute people, to prosecute terrorists for poisoning an American city? Come on, you know better. We went through months and months and years of preliminary trials and fact-finding missions, but nothing was really happening. There was no movement. So this year, everything fell on newly elected Democratic Attorney General Dana Nessel's lap. That's why she hired Solicitor General Hammond and Prosecutor Worthy to handle the investigation. And as we've learned, they learned rather quickly that Schuette's prosecutor, Todd Flood, had botched this entire investigation from day one. In fact, they fired Flood just a few months ago. As Hamwood said in a statement, the discovery was not fully and properly pursued from the onset of this investigation. Wow. Now, that was eye-opening at the time, if you recall. And then they also discovered how millions of documents had not been released. MLive reported back in April, and I'm quoting here, millions of documents related to the Flint water crisis, including a list of state employees titled Phones Wiped, have been discovered in the basement of a state-owned building, according to a filing Friday, April 26th, by the Michigan Attorney General's Office in Genesee Circuit Court. Solicitor General Fadwa Hammond made the explosive claim in a 10-page request for a 6-month delay in the prosecution of former Department of Health and Human Services Director Nick Lyon, whose attorney said the request amounted to nothing more than stalling in a case that was originally filed 2 years ago. So, you could see back then, just a few months ago, that something wasn't right. I mean, what the hell was Bill Schuette doing this whole time? Was it all window dressing as he attempted to become governor? And just think, if he did become governor, would we have learned about these millions of documents related to the Flint water crisis? Let me break some news for you. No, we would not have. The cases that Schuette brought to court were designed to fail. And knowing this, it makes sense why Hammond and Worthy decided the other day to drop the 8 cases against those who were charged with wrongdoing in the crisis. As MLive reported, the decision means the criminal cases are dismissed against Nick Lyon, the former Department of Health and Human Services Director, Eden Wells, the former Chief Medical Executive for the state, former Emergency Managers Gerald Ambrose and Darnell Early, Department of Health and Human Services officials Nancy Peeler and Robert Scott, Department of Environmental Quality official Patrick Cook, and former Flint Department of Public Works Director Howard Croft. Now, as the Detroit Free Press's Brian Dickerson noted, most of the cases Nestle's office pulled the plug on Thursday were already on life support, and a Genesee County Circuit Court judge appeared poised to toss manslaughter charges against the highest-profile defendant, former State Health Director Nick Lyon, if prosecutors hadn't beaten him to the punch by folding their case. Well, all right. So now, contrary to what some of the angry tweets and comments I've been reading online, this does not mean these same people cannot be recharged. They most definitely can be recharged. But I get why authorities have decided to stop and call for a do-over. We need, for the first time, really, we need an honest investigation into one of the biggest crimes to ever hit the state of Michigan. Let me tell you, if you believe Kim Worthy, who made a name by gaining convictions against three police officers in the killing of Malice Green back in the early 1990s, isn't going to do a thorough job, then you don't know much about Kim Worthy. Look, I'll never fully grasp what the people of Flint had to endure because I didn't have to live it. And I understand why many activists and community organizers are outraged at the moment. They have every reason to be outraged because, once again, their government failed them. But it was conservative government that failed them. We now have an attorney general who's put competent people in control of the investigation. And as Brian Dickerson concluded in his column this week, so like the rest of us, Nestle will just have to wait and see what happens next. But either way, Bill Schuette's Flint probe is over. It's his successor's investigation now. I know this is not the news many wanted to hear, but if we're going to get this right, and if we're going to make sure that every stone is unturned, every file is read, every phone and computer is opened, then we're just going to have to wait and let these women do their jobs. The Schuette Flint investigation is over, thankfully, because it was a major failure. A new chapter is starting. Let's hope it helps the people of Flint get the justice they deserve. You're listening to LOL.
The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Word has it, that's Rick Snyder's favorite site. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Now, I have to agree with friend of this podcast and the editor-in-chief of Michigan Advance, Susan Demas, when she tweeted the following about how the press is covering this latest news regarding the Flint water crisis. Susan tweets, "So much irresponsible journalism about Flint right now. It's a real disservice." Hear, hear. Time for the Left of Lansing last call. First, thank you, Congressman Dan Kildee from Flint, on announcing that it's time to impeach Trump. Derek Robertson from Michigan Advance reports that U.S. Representative Dan Kildee came out in support of President Trump's impeachment on Thursday, joining a growing chorus of House Democrats. Appearing on MSNBC's Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell, Kildee reacted to Trump's assertion this week that he wouldn't reject further intelligence from a foreign power on one of his political opponents. "What the president said is absolutely chilling," Kildee says. "I've come a long way just in the last month on the subject. I think we now have to have an impeachment inquiry." Thank you. You know, it still astounds me that many Democrats are just sitting back and accepting that we're living in normal times. Aren't most congressional Democrats like me who wake up every day and find it hard to believe this guy is in the White House? I mean, can you imagine if President Obama said publicly that he'd take information about his political opponents from Iran if Iran offered? Can you imagine that? Oh, I'm so certain the right-wing media would have stayed silent on such a story. They wouldn't have cared. No, no way. No way. They would just would have said, yep, oh, he's the president and he can do whatever he wants to do. Yeah, right. But for some reason, President Trump can get away with it. Welcome to white privilege in America. Or, as Childish Gambino said, this is America. Anyway, thank you, Congressman Kildee, for doing the right thing. And thank you, Congressman Andy Levin from Bloomfield Township, for just announcing this weekend that impeachment inquiries ought to begin now. Thank you. That makes five Michigan Democrats in Congress who have now called for impeachment inquiries to begin. Let's stay in Flint and raise a glass to Democratic State Representative Brian Elder. Now, this week, the Republican state legislature released its budget proposals, and of course, it didn't include Governor Whitmer's gas tax as a long-term solution to fixing the roads. While there are some differences in both the House and Senate bills, of course, they fall short in really beginning to fix the long-term problems facing our infrastructure. As Lauren Gibbons writes in MLive, House Republicans hope to transition fully to putting all tax collected at the pump toward infrastructure. The House budget plan assumes all funds currently collected as a sales tax, which largely goes towards schools and local governments, would be shifted to roads in the following fiscal year, generating an estimated $830 million. That $830 million, everybody, if it really comes to that, is well short of the estimated $2.5 billion per year that's needed to fix the roads, according to many experts. But here's my favorite part, and it has to be how the House Republicans want to sell off many of this state's transportation assets. Gibbons writes, under the House plan, MDOT officials would be tasked with developing a request for proposals for the possible sale of the Blue Water Bridge, one of Michigan's crossing points between U.S. and Canada. The state co-owns the bridge with the Canadian government. Other state-owned properties that could potentially be put up for sale under the current language includes 8 state welcome centers, 4 small state-owned airports, and a state-owned rail line between Grayling and Gaylord. To which State Representative Brian Nelder responded, according to the Detroit News, who wants an airport or a rail line? Or my personal favorite, a welcome center? Coming soon, a great big sign that says, welcome to Michigan. It costs $1 to pee at the rest stop. For what? For more pothole patch? That's not good enough for my people. Huzzah to State Representative Brian Elder. Thank you. And I'm certain your constituents thank you as well. What a sham. Oh, and by the way, state Republicans also are looking at toll roads because paying to use a road isn't a tax. Oh, man. The Michigan GOP plan to fix the roads is to privatize state assets because, you know, when has that ever gone wrong? To quote CCR from Fortunate Son, Lord, this house looks like a rummage sale. And finally, Lisa Abramowitz from Bloomberg Radio tweeted the following. The U.S. Treasury saw a 31% drop in corporate tax revenues last year, almost twice the decline official budget forecasters had predicted. Receipts were projected to rebound sharply this year, but so far, they've only continued to fall. To which liberal economist Dean Baker tweeted the following. Looks like the Trump tax cut succeeded even better than intended. We all know this was supposed to be the end game. We now know why corporations and why the rich are backing Donald Trump. Yeah, once in a while they might wag their finger around and say, oh, you shouldn't say things like that, Donald. But in the end, they're going to vote for him. Why? Because they made billions and billions of dollars. His tax cut cost America over $500 billion. And now they have the gall to say, where are we going to get the money to pay for things? And we wonder why someone like Elizabeth Warren is catching fire with millions of Democratic voters. Oh, and speaking of that, good job, Democratic Party, ensuring that Warren won't get to be on the same stage as Bernie, Biden, and Harris in the first debate coming up in 11 days. It's almost like you didn't want her on that same stage for some reason. I wonder why. Regardless, I do hope Senators Harris and Sanders don't waste their chances at not only attacking the former VP's record, but also illustrating their blueprint on helping progressives win across the country. Because in the end, that's what this is all about. Winning the presidency is one thing. That's just the start. You've got to be able to win the House. You've got to be able to take over the Senate. And you've got to be able to take over governorships and state legislatures throughout the country. If you don't do that, winning the presidency really doesn't do a whole lot in the end.
You've been listening to the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Don't forget, you can contact Pat by emailing leftoflansing@gmail.com.
All right, well, that's going to do it for me this week. Thanks for downloading this podcast and listening to me muse on for a while about Michigan politics and also national politics. Remember, if you'd like to give me an email, it's very simple. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, which is @leftoflansing, and you can visit our Facebook page as well. Don't forget about leftoflansing.com. Coming up next week, I'll be talking with a representative from the ACLU of Michigan as we talk about voting rights. Yes, we made some big gains last year in Michigan on that front. However, Republican efforts to disenfranchise voters will still continue, not just here in Michigan, but across the country. And that's what we'll be talking about next week. Hope you can join us next week. In the meantime, everybody, as I always tell you each and every week, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.